Greetings, listeners and watchers. This is Rob Brown of the Accounting Influencer Podcast, continuing with a series of panels on the future of accounting. Where are we going? Does anybody care? Does it matter? Are we in good shape right now? If we do have a navigated journey to travel, how are we going to get there? Can we get there any faster? Will accountants change? Do they need to change? All of these questions and more will be answered by this very distinguished panel today. They will introduce themselves in just a moment. And we will answer the very toughest questions we can find to talk about what is coming up for the accounting world and the stakeholders that serve them. So welcome to you all. Ed, can I start with you? A little introduction, please. Tell everybody who you are.
Sure, Ed Kless. My formal title at Sage is the Senior Director of Partner Development and Strategy, but that really doesn't mean anything. So I bill myself as a meta consultant in that I consult to people who do consulting, which is kind of a weird gig. But also have the privilege of being the host of the Sage Thought Leadership Podcast and also co-host of The Soul of Enterprise with my friend and colleague, Ron Baker at the Fair Sage Institute.
Ron Baker, friend of the show, been on a few times, legend of the pricing and subscription world. That's wonderful. Michael Turner, welcome. A quick intro from you, sir.
Thanks, Robert. Michael Turner, CEO of Validus, and we basically help accountants get data quick out of systems such as Ed Sage and really get it into the working papers.
Good to have you with us, Michael. And from one vendor to another, Steve Cox, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Rob. See, I'm Steve Cox. I'm the Business Intelligence Director for Iris. What does that really mean? Ultimately, I'm there to try and help accountants to, one, evolve, and to help them to progress on their own goals. It's a really interesting one, what Michael was just saying about how they help with the data side of things. From an Iris perspective, one of the things that we're trying to do is trying to help accountants to deliver their services in a more efficient way to their clients as well, but help them with their mission-critical client services and ultimately help them to achieve their goals, whether that's going to be an exit, whether it's going to be a growth, or whether it's going to be a work-life balance, because we all need a bit more of our own time, right?
I'm sure some of those things will come up. Thank you, Steve. Dan McMahon, welcome.
Thank you for having me. Dan McMahon with Integrated Growth Advisors. I'm a management consultant. We are a management consulting firm that serves the needs of privately held businesses and especially CPA firms. I'm based in the United States. We work perhaps worldwide. At this point in time, we're working focused just in the United States. My focus is on corporate governance for privately held businesses and helping our business clients get their house in order, kind of get to a point where there's accountability and alignment throughout the organization. I spent 19 years in the public accounting industry. I was previously a partner with a $30 million revenue regional firm. I've been doing this for 12 years.
Great to have you with us. We are going to lock and load and unleash Ed Kless on the world by asking you all the first question. We will start with you, Ed. By way of opening comments, what kind of shape do you feel the accounting profession is in right now? Had you been in this game a long time?
Stuck. In a word, stuck. And it's stuck for many reasons. Nothing is monocausal. Okay. There's lots of challenges that are coming to bear on this. But I still believe that the cancer of the accounting profession is the billable hour and the timesheet. And as long as folks are mired in that world of we sell time versus we sell access to or transfer of knowledge, they're never going to make any progress on that. And it is a mindset that is pervasive, like cancer is pervasive, and it needs to change, or over time it's just going to be the profession is going to become more and more irrelevant. People don't buy your time; they buy knowledge, access to knowledge, they buy results, they buy value to themselves, they buy reduced time for themselves, right? So they're actually trying to reduce their time. Steven is opening made a comment which is right on par: help accountants become more efficient. Well, that's great, except if your business model is based on the number of hours that you bill, being efficient lowers your revenue. Good luck with that, Steve.
Well, Steve, let's come to you after that. What kind of shape do you feel we're in right now?
The way I would describe it in one word is kind of like change, right? And that's not changed from a point of view of we've got one compliance going after another. And I think Ed just said the exact word I was thinking of, which is it's the mindset. And it's a change in mindset that's going on right now. I'm a chartered accountant in the UK, so I've got some experience kind of working as an accountant. And the real thing that we're seeing is around firms going from thinking of, I'm just going to go and do what I've always done, to then starting to think about how can I go and do things differently. And there's been a lot of drivers of change recently. I know we'll probably come on to those, so I won't go through them. But it's this mindset shift from people thinking about things analog style. So thinking about how, right, well, I've always done it like this. This is the manual process I would go through. And here's all the paperwork that I would go through. To then going and looking at almost like digitizing it, which is kind of the next sign of mindset we're seeing, which is where firms are then going, well, is there a way of using technology to help me to go do that? Ed's got a really good point in that actually, if they make themselves more efficient, then in theory, does their revenue go down? Because if they're charging for billable hours, ultimately you could say, well, that just means they can increase their volume. But then the last mindset shift seems to be the one that we're seeing the growing number of firms going down, which is this kind of like digital mindset. And that's not a case of going to the extreme of saying every single thing I do is going to be done in the cloud and stuff like that. It's actually looking at how can the technology help me to rewrite the way I do things and provide new things. And it's almost like the opening up to new types of client services as well. And that's what we're really starting to see, this mindset shift. And is it going to happen overnight? No, it's going to take years, maybe decades to get to a fundamental shift. We're starting to see all the green shoots of it now.
Okay. Slightly optimistic. Dan McMahon, if we're going to get anywhere, we need to know where we're starting from. So where are we right now?
I think I agree. We're in a period of transformative change, and it's coming from a lot of different directions. We've got the private equity influx into the U.S. accounting firms. That, I think, is going to drive the need to run businesses rather than accounting firms, rather than a cluster of practices. We're also seeing, with respect to, I think, what Ed was saying in terms of the billable hour, I look at that and I think about it also from the perspective of performing at your pay grade and not just doing T accounts. If you're a partner in a regional accounting firm, you shouldn't be doing something that is literally below your level of expertise. You can't bill for value at that level. So I think as technology comes in and starts to automate some of the less judgmental related tasks that CPAs perform, we're going to see people performing at their pay grade. So that's kind of what I'm looking at, is performing at pay grade, highest and best use, and a period of transformative change for sure.
Yeah. Michael, you talk to accountants all the time. What sense do you get of where we are right now?
I feel it's almost like a house that was built in the 50s and it hasn't been renovated since. There are great foundations. It's profitable. It's mandatory. It's still, you know, a very good career prospects for many people that go to it. So it's got all the foundations of a house that you need. It's got the square footage. It's got everything. But no one wants to go in the house anymore because it's still got beige wallpaper and, you know, old style. It hasn't got a modern TV. To take, you know, kind of Ed's point, it hasn't really changed with the time, and they're not digitizing. They're not really billing in the right way. But in the house, you know, we're not saying they need to knock it down and start again. It's maybe upgrading a room at a time, picking a few things, whether it's billable hours or digital. And so that's why I think it's that more analogy than it's broken. It's people haven't summed up the energy to do the renovation that's needed. And there's a lot of tools you can use to do that.
I'm just thinking, and I welcome any more comments on anything anyone said, but the houses of today, certainly some of them, they're a lot smaller. The walls are a lot thinner. The foundations are a lot less stable. So would you actually want a modern house? We could have that argument. But in terms of where we are generally, guys, is it a thumbs up? Is it a good place to launch from with everything that's needed? Anyone?
You say about launch from, I think you look at it today and you look at the number of new firms that are popping up. that kind of gives you an indication as to this is a stable profession, a stable industry that people actively want to go into. There's a reason why PE firms are falling over themselves to go and fund these sorts of things. Love Michael's analogy, though, and I think that the funding bit is actually quite relevant to this as well. So you look at it and go, right, someone's going to come in with a load of money, PE potentially, or another source, and go, right, we're going to go and renovate the whole house. And the problem is, when you do that, to Michael's point, it's going to cause more problems than it's going to help. So taking it down into kind of like bite-sized or room-sized chunks is probably the better way to go. The real issue we find, and this is kind of the flip side of it, is that those people that are renovating, sometimes they get stuck in the process of doing it and therefore then go, they've wanted me to continue and I'm off. And then they leave. Most, this is where we see a lot of accountants that are in practice, they even go into industry, they leave to go to business because one, they don't have to do the renovation. Someone's done it for them, or actually they're moving into a high rise or into a tower block within the city. So therefore there's nothing to be done there. And then wages are better, right? There's not so much of the emphasis on having to go and build it themselves. So it feels like there's a lot of people coming in. New houses are being built all the time. There's more renovation going on, to Michael's point. The question is that how many more are going to leave that and are going to go work in the city to do something else?
Ed, you look pregnant with profound wisdom.
I think far more radical than Mike or Steve. And radical, of course, comes from the same Latin root as the word as radish, right? So it's rip it out from the root. that's what a radical does. And I think we do. The root is the business model. The root is the business model of we sell time. And that's what needs to be ripped out. And look, these VC firms and who are coming in, they will, and I've talked to a number of people last week about this. Yeah, they're leaving us alone. I'm like, take it from someone who works for a company in the UK who says we are an acquisitive company. That's the word we use. We are acquisitive. We leave you alone until we don't.
Yeah.
And because what's happening and what has been the true for years is that firms, especially even regional firms, even to some extent national firms in the US anyway, are it's medieval feudalism, right? There's a king, and your local lord has to pay enough tribute up to the king, and the king will leave you alone if you pay up enough tribute. But once you stop paying enough tribute up to the king, the king comes involved with an army. And I think that's what we're going to see happen with these VC firms, is that they're going to leave them alone for a while until they don't. And, you know, they're going to pay out some of the partners who were going to retire anyway. Maybe they're going to leave earlier. But we've got a very real problem. I think it was alluded to by everyone. You know, there's a dearth of people coming into the profession. And this is a real problem, especially if your model is we sell time because you need people to sell the time. So that, you know, yet another factor that's in there. And yeah, we're seeing in the U.S., you know, accountants, first of all, we have the 150-hour rule in the U.S., which in my opinion has been an absolute disaster, because in most states, it's not even you have to take 30 more hours of accounting. You can take underwater basket weaving and golf, right? As long as you get the additional credits, completely absurd. So it's just delaying this. So people are looking at that from a college perspective. Why should I do that? I can go into finance with a 4-year degree and 128 credits, right? So anyway, there's a lot of problems that are all manifesting and festering right now that we need more radical change than just room and renovation.
Okay, so I'm hearing problems. Absolutely right. These are widespread, and let's face it, not just endemic to accounting, but a lot of those are self-inflicted by the accounting profession. I'm thinking about the drivers of change and the threats. If the profession does need to change, what is going to make them change? Cynically, accountants don't change much unless it's mandated by law or new tax regulations, so we could say that. But who is going to eat the accountant's lunch? Who are the real threats to accounting? So billable hour might be a problem. Efficiency mindset might be a problem. But what is actually going to force them to change? Michael.
I think the biggest one we hear when we speak with accountants is the lack of talent coming through.
Okay.
It is, if they don't, and I think this is to Ed's point about changing the model, you need to change the incentives for how people drive value to determine where they spend time on. Like Dan, I was a management consultant in a prior life, and we moved to something called impact-based pricing, where you charge based on the impact you have, and there's success fees against that. Now, I know you have to be careful with that, especially on the audit side about independence and what are you there for, but that changes the way people think about the jobs they do, what they want to achieve, and the times they put in. Like, to Steve's point, this, if we're going to try and be more efficient, well, efficient for what? More billable hours or more value and a higher charge? So I think it does all come back to many of the elements that are coming up. But I think the single biggest threat is you don't have any people to run this business going up. This pyramid structure that is often partner, the king on top, will start to look a little bit more like a diamond and then an inverted pyramid. And what do you do?
Talent may force a change. Dan, what are the threats that will force the accounting profession to change in your eyes?
I think it relates also to what Michael's saying. I just happened to open up for, I think it was Forbes online this morning, and I saw an article from last week that in the United States, there's a shortage of 349,000 accountants. And the topic of the article was that we're starting to see that manifest in errors that are taking place in SEC reports. So when an auditor does the reporting and the company does the financial reporting for the capital markets, it gets reported through the SEC, and there's a problem because there's an error, and then potentially the company has to go through a restatement. I think that tagging on to what Michael's saying, I think there could be regulators that could force an issue, as well as capital markets.
People, but errors in audit are not new. Scandals in accounting are not new, Dan, and not much has changed, has it?
Well, it coming from the perspective of having a shortage of people, you're where are you cutting the corners to be able to go home at 10 o'clock at night? You know, it's a demanding industry as it is. So I could see where the regulators, as well as investors in public companies, could begin some of the change.
Yeah.
Forcefully.
Steve, if I was eating your lunch, you'd want to do something about it. What are the threats to accounting from where you look?
I mean, everyone always talks about that. There's four major challenges and threats to the accounting industry, right? One is the sheer complexity and volume of compliance that keeps coming on, and accountants are constantly having to learn around all of the new things and provide this. And therefore, the more compliance you give, and therefore the services of it, you then think, well, actually, I can charge more. Most accountants don't. And therefore, then the cost of compliance goes up, but the value they're generating off the back of it continues to diminish. And you've got the technology aspect, where everyone keeps talking about AI is going to come in and replace the accountant, and other technologies as well. Interesting that people talk about AI, but blockchain is going to be the one that makes the biggest difference to everybody from the point of view of automating work. Clients' expectations are going through the roof. They expect more for less in their own personal lives. They're more used to self-service. I mean, I am old enough to remember going into a bank with a bank book to go and see your balance. Now you get a text daily, or you've got the app that will proactively tell you what's going on. But it kind of all does stem back to this talent issue. Now, I know I said earlier that you've got more accounting firms popping up. That's true, but you've got less people within those firms, and you've got less students going in. I mean, in the UK, there's a report from the FRC, so the Financial Reporting Council, who do a study of kind of the number of students that are going into the major accounting bodies. The number of new students that come in year on year, the growth is diminishing, but the number of firms is going up. So we're all fighting to not only get the good staff, but then to retain them. And that what people are asking for now within a firm is a lot different than what they used to. It used to be that it's just around the salary. Now it's around working from home. It's around the benefits in kind. It's all around the wider package to all of this. And I've got to be honest, it doesn't feel like firms are structured to be able to compensate people in the right way.
I'm sure we could get rid of 500,000 accountants if we invented 500,000 robots, right, Ed?
Well, maybe. It depends on the robot, I suppose. The look, there are things from a technological perspective that are going to significantly change. I mean, one of the things that Aaron Harris at Sage talks about is that the notion of continuous audit and continuous close that will I think are really around the corner from a Sage perspective. I think these things are happening much quickly than people realize. Now, I think the issue, going back to the slightly previous conversation, is what's going to beat accountants? Well, when Jeff Bezos drops $400 million into a company called Pilot, I would start to worry that you're competing with Amazon. Yeah. I mean, Amazon is, you know, taking out now the prescription, taking on prescription drugs in the United States. You know, why not accountants and bookkeepers next?
Supermarkets here are already taking on insurance.
Yep.
And wealth management products. So yeah, there's a lot of crossover, and that might well make accountants change. Just a quick fire round, guys. What's going to happen to the vendors, the accounting firms, the segments of the profession that won't change? Any thoughts on that? Is extinction, irrelevance too strong a word? Will they just fade into the background, or will they always have a foothold?
I always quote General Eric Cinchecki: if you don't like change, you're going to like irrelevance even less.
Yeah, that just about sums it up. Let's give you a magic wand, gentlemen. If we're gonna paint a better picture or make things happen fast, let's imagine we can do something overnight. So if I gave you one wish, what would you want to happen overnight? Dan, what have you got for us?
The way that I would look at approaching this, and this is coming from the perspective of working with firms that, let's say, are less than 50 million in revenues, and in particular, probably less than 20 million in revenues.
Okay.
I would say they need to function more like businesses. And, you know, being a partner, being a leader in those organizations, it has its privileges, it has its benefits, but it also has its obligations and responsibilities. Too often I've come across firms making somebody a partner, and it becomes a little bit of a boondoggle. That doesn't say that the partners aren't working significant hours to try and meet the demands of their clients. But I see oftentimes where these firms, they don't settle into a rhythm. You know, the aspect of a continuous audit, that could really help an accounting firm settle into a rhythm where the auditors are just out there monthly, looking at monthly closes and things like that.
I've never heard boondoggle before, but I get your point that you want accounting firms, if you had one wish, to be run like businesses.
Like a business with structure at the top, tone at the top. Many firms do this, but there are plenty of firms that do not.
Yeah.
And when you filter down throughout the organization, you know, I'd want to work with those clients or see them break the business down into manageable parts and attack strategies and tactics around each of the different elements of a business, not just disciplines of an accounting firm, those being audit, tax, and consulting.
Yeah,
I look at a firm as being sales and marketing, people development, HR and recruiting, firm administration, and delivery of services to clients. I mean, there's a lot of dimensions to look at if you're going to take a businessman's approach to running the firm.
Got it. One wish for you, Ed. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm a libertarian by nature, but I'll throw this one out. I'll say, what if we were to make declare the billable hour illegal?
There you go.
You're not allowed to bill by the hour anymore. Then what?
That's a really good way to use a wish. Sure. Because that would make a whole new tomorrow, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I've done this exercise with people where I said, what if the billable hour were to be declared illegal tomorrow, what would you do? And they come up with stuff like, oh my God, we'd actually have to have conversations with our customers. We'd have to like lead our people and not just, you know, look at their timesheet. We'd actually have to teach them what to do.
Yeah. Crazy. Widespread panic, I would have thought, in the accounting world. What about you, Michael? Anything you'd make illegal? What would be your wish?
I agree that it's about leadership on these ones. And I think partners at these firms cast long shadows in what they do and how they believe. So if I could wave a magic wand, it would be to encourage partners to try something new? Because yeah, I still, Ed, to be slightly contradictory, I would love to do those big changes, but very rarely have I ever seen them happen. So I'm always about incremental change. So whether I just would, the partner would try something new, and whether that's a new vendor, a new way, drop billable hours, something that drives forwards. So, but often they don't. You see all these juniors coming up with great ideas. I imagine the amount of AI ideas that the team members are coming up with, and partners are just saying, no, we've always done it this way. We're not going to change. That's what I wish they would. They're just open to a change.
Open to a change is quite a vague wish. It could be done in a million different ways. Can you be super specific on your wish?
No, unfortunately, because each firm is different. I really believe that. I think you've got to do it. But the fact that most partners do not want any change, I still think it's a big wish to just change one thing in their process to make it better.
Yeah, okay. The next question for you all, putting you all on notice, is what separates the good firms from the great ones? So just be thinking about that. Steve, what's your big wish, magic wand?
I was listening to what everybody was saying, and you could literally see my wish kind of bouncing around different ideas. I genuinely think, though, that my wish would be to drive better accountability on the profession bodies. Because from my view, we can try and instigate change on a one-on-one basis with these firms. But how do you make real change happen? You've got to make that happen at volume. And the only ones that can do that at volume is going to be the professional bodies. So we've got to look at how do we fix the problems of today and make an instant change within firms. So who could go do that? Professional bodies could do that and force it onto their members. But also these professional bodies are the ones that are training the next generation of accountants, those students. If we want to instigate change in what the future generations are like, instead of them coming into a firm and just adopting what's already been there. And Michael's point's really valid around the kind of, you're bringing up these juniors and they're going to come into a partnership model and things like that. But as we've talked about talent, how many of these accountants have been trained in how to run a business? They've been trained in how to do a TKN, how to do a profit and loss, an income statement, all of this. But how many of them really been trained by their institutes, by their professional bodies of, this is how you run a business. This is how you make sure that you're being accountable for your stakeholders in the business, your employees, not just for the partner who's going to retire. And ultimately, all he cares about is his pension fund. So therefore, he doesn't want to make change because he doesn't want to rock the boat on what his future life's going to be. So it's got to be accountability.
Just a quick one, fellas. Who's responsible, do you feel, for changing the profession? Steve talked about the accounting bodies, regulatory bodies, professional societies. Michael, Ed, you may say that the vendors, the tech providers are leading the charge for change, all the R&D and AI stuff you're driving forward. Maybe the accountants themselves. Any quick answers on that, guys? Not to blame or put it at the feet of anybody, but who is in the best position to drive change, you think, out of all the stakeholders in the ecosystem?
Well, responsible for change is the answer is everyone. You can't have it be one, because top down is difficult. There's problems with all of it. It has to be, yeah. No, we as a group, we have to decide that we need to go to a different place, and it's one person at a time to do that. As for who's in the best position to do that, scarily enough, probably it's people who are outside the profession. They're the ones who were forced change. You know, Daniel Susskind, in his great book, The Future of the Professions, said that which kills you does not look like you. And I think
clients there, Ed, would they be outside the profession? Would they drive change?
In a sense, by voting with their feet and by going elsewhere and by getting what they need, not from traditional accountants.
Yeah.
No.
Very good. Let's talk about good to great. Gents, you talk to good firms, you talk to average firms, you talk to poor firms, you talk to world-class firms. For you, Steve, what separates the good from the great?
It's interesting. I was thinking about one of the things that Dan said about the firms that kind of treat their as a business. One of the things that I see from really good firms are those that are actually not in a part like the traditional partner model, that they are run as a business, where the board of directors and ultimately have that accountability. they're the ones that are actually hitting their goals and striving for change, but also are kind of like constantly improving on what they do. So good firms don't just rest on their laurels. They're always looking for how can they improve things, to Michael's point, looking for that incremental change. Bad firms, there's so many of them, right? But ultimately, bad firms, in my view, are the ones that are kind of sitting there going, well, compliance is a requirement, so therefore I don't need to change because everyone's got to come to me. There's only two things in life that are certain: death and taxes, and accountants do the taxes. So therefore, why change? I don't need to, is what the bad firms are, the mentality that they've got.
What about you, Dan? What turns good to great firms?
Well, the concept of average came up too, Rob, and I think it's really easy to be average in the accounting industry. It's difficult for a client to fire his or her accountant because the accountant has all the private information and all their secrets held over years of serving. So,
and is it easy to be average and make money in accounting firms too, Dan? That's part of the problem, isn't it?
I think that is clearly a problem, yes. And it relates in part to how people distribute their time and a little bit of what Ed's talking about with billing for value. To look at good to great, what I see is the great firms have a very well understood purpose from leadership down to the lowest level of the firm. They understand their values. They understand what's important to the marketplace. And they're managed from a global perspective internally that way. And then they've got clarity around roles and responsibilities, around metrics and goals, and policies and procedures. So when I come across a firm that has all of that uncovered, and I'm looking to work with them, I'm probably going to have a pretty difficult time scratching the surface to figure out where I could add some value myself. Yeah. As a management consultant.
That's an honest answer. If everything's right, you're not needed, are you? Michael, what about good to great for you? You work with some excellent firms and maybe some not so good ones.
Yeah, I think Dan covered a lot of them, especially of the great firms. I think the one I'd add is, there's two I'd add. So one, customer focused or value focused. I think too often accounts are input rather than output driven. Like, what a value am I adding to you know, kind of adds back to the billable hour. It's, you know, my tool saves them 8 hours. And often one of per client, one of the first pushbacks I get is, well, what can we do with those 8 hours saved? Can I bill them? What, like, how does it impact billing? Not, can I get better data? Can I, it's the input, not the output. And then I think that the second one is a little bit about this partnership model as well, where often the highest revenue generators make the calls rather than potentially those best informed or the one that's really trying to drive the change. That is a bugbear of mine in many professional services led, whether it's accountants, management consultants, or lawyers. I think the highest revenue generators have an undue influence over what good looks like.
Ed, what about you? Good to great?
I think Dan nailed it on the head. Great is always driven from mission, vision, values, purpose. I mean, that is always the separator. The only, I guess, thing that I would add a layer under that, because it's still about purpose, is to say that the firm who does not believe that all new revenue is good revenue, who understands that we can optimize at a particular size and we don't have to grow. Growth for growth's sake is the ideology of a cancer cell, not a sustainable business. And sadly, there's a growth only mindset among many accountants that say we must be continuously growing, or we're dying. And the great firms understand, nope, I can be, you know, find a slot at $20 million a year and get really, really great at that slot.
Guys, we're leading up to the crystal ball time, a couple of predictions, so hold that in abeyance. I'm going to ask you to wax lyrically on a pet topic of yours. So we're talking about change, and there are many different areas of change We talked about talent culture, governance, firm structures, compensation, billable hour, governing bodies, tech, private equity, leadership. All of these things have featured in these conversations. So I'm going to ask you to pick one that is a pet area of expertise or passion for you and give some practical solutions to our audience in just a couple of minutes. So, Steve, can you kick off with that one? What are you going to choose and what have you got for us?
So, go with powers of the people, right, for talent. The reason why I would pick that one is very much a case of a lot of the issues that we've just talked about and those that are bad firms and even those that are good firms, what's the kind of commonality behind all of them? It's either good or bad stuff. One of the things I talk to firms all the time is around kind of understanding processes, understanding around have they got enough throughput, where are the bottlenecks within their firm? And often enough, it's down to a resource constraint of people. So therefore, if they want to go look at their strategy, if they want to look at how do they do the great things or how do they kind of get away from the timesheets and things like that, they need to free up their own time, almost like give themselves some headspace. Therefore, you need staff to take on some of the other aspects of what partners are doing, because a lot of partners will still get in the weeds. They want to do the day-to-day, whereas actually they should be thinking about the strategy and driving this as a business. So therefore, how do you fix that? Because we've already said there's a real talent shortage. There's a real issue in the number of new talent coming in. So therefore, is it a mindset shift towards kind of looking at outsourcing, as even if it's a stopgap piece to help them to free up the initial time to go, right, how do we pivot? How do we change? How do we go and do the things we need to really do? So therefore, allowing those senior leaders to focus on the strategy and ultimately not just thinking about it, but actually off the back of it, it's got to be about freeing up their time.
Ed, let's put you on your soapbox. What's your pet peeve that gets your blood boiling and how we're going to solve it?
Oh, I've waxed already on several topics. Let me add a new one since I had that, which I haven't talked about. Let's eliminate the annual performance agony, appraisal, and instead institute a system of after-action reviews that occur on a more frequent basis inside the organization, whether that be around a major project or engagement that's done or just on a regular cadence, have after-action review meetings. That is the tool, in my opinion, that is the replacement for both the annual performance review and the timesheet is after-action reviews.
Mm, you heard it here. Michael, you're nodding at that one. What do you want to get on your soapbox about?
I nodded at that one because that's what we used to do in consulting, and it still shocks me that accountants in a very similar don't do it, because it's a great way to progress. I agree with Ed. My one is change management. We've talked about all the things accountants need to change, but having worked in many industries, I think accountants are the worst industry I've seen at agreeing on change, adopting it and driving it through. And then you ask me, how would I fix it? I think, unfortunately, they do need to have people that know how to drive change. Change isn't just about setting rules and mandating it. It's about driving behavior change, explaining to people why the change is happening. So you actually do need people dedicated to this who know what they're doing, not just a partner that wants to take a step back from driving revenue. Now, they should be driving the strategy. As Steve said, they should be driving what they want to change, but actually implementing it, I think without it, the new firms or that they will eat their lunch.
Maybe we need more change management consultants, Michael, to drive the
change. No, I never did that. That is not a job that I would want to do, but there is a skill set.
I'm reminded of the story of the dog on the porch whining. And another dog comes up and says, "Why are you whining?" He said, "I've got a thorn in my foot, in my pad." And he says, "Well, why don't you pull it out?" And the dog says, "Well, it doesn't hurt enough." And it is that of that complacency, or you're swimming in your own soup and you don't notice that the water's getting hotter, and boom, before you know it, you've got to make a change and you're on the wrong end of that. Dan, what are you going to have a rant about?
I would say I could get on board with any one of these. The thing that comes to mind for me is supply and demand. It's a basic economic principle, supply and demand. And we have this, the numbers are drastic. The shortages of people, the scramble that's going on to try and get the work done. Ed touched on something earlier that not all revenue is good revenue. If you took a supply and demand approach and you really approach the business strategically. Not all revenue is good revenue. Bring in the revenue, align it with the right talent, and have the discipline to continue to bring in that revenue that aligns with the right talent so that you don't have people performing below their pay grade. And I think that's one aspect of the supply and demand challenge. And then, you know, the other thing is we've got the larger firms. There's a cascading effect going on where the larger firms are dumping all of the work that could eventually become and likely will become automated. The lower end firms are just, they're gobbling all of that work up and they don't realize that they actually have a sales problem. So going out and addressing the supply and demand issue and doing it from a revenue focus and also how you utilize your people, I think is where I'd come from on this.
It's interesting, said a sales problem. I don't know many accounting firms that are struggling for work right now.
They're not, but they're taking on, it's to what Ed said, not all revenue is good revenue.
Yeah, some of the wrong clients. I agree with that. Let's get your crystal balls out, fellas, if I may say so. But actually, to be very specific on this, I'm asking you for, and I'll start with you, Michael, on this one. What are your top two? Let's go for two. Surefire, 100%, definitely going to happen. Predictions for the accounting profession in coming years. So something you would put your house on. What do you say, Michael?
Two things. One, it will be a team of people that does, and we're specialized in audit, so I'm going to talk more about the audit side of accounting than the other side, but it will be a team of people that performs the audit. So I'm talking data engineers, maybe AI prompt engineers, because the amount of data and AI that will be involved in the next 2 to 3 years, if we're talking about talent shortages to get CPAs or CAs, and they can't keep those, they're going to find it real tough to find all the other skill sets that they're going to need. So that's one. I think it will be a multidisciplinary team.
Is it not now, Michael?
Sorry?
Is audit not now a multidisciplinary sport?
I don't think so. Like, you look at the teams, I wouldn't call it more as where it needs to be.
Yeah, okay. And it's number two.
Second, I think we're going to move from a sample-driven audit to a proper data-driven audit. And with the new tools, whether it's, you know, how do you connect to the ERPs, the AI on top of it, even just advanced techniques, accountants are going to be expected to check every data item or the tools that will do it. So therefore, the accountant's going to have to up the game of, well, what value am I bringing? The so what for the customer. So I think that we'll move to a true data-driven audit rather than just sample checking tick boxes, I think, in the next 2 to 3 years. Because the tools exist out there, just no one's pieced it all together yet.
Sure. Dan, what are you going to put your house on? Two predictions.
Well, I'd like to clarify where I was coming from on the supply and demand comment. One part of it is the revenue issue. The other part of it is aligning people with their highest and best use capacity in serving clients. In doing so, you should also be looking internally at which clients you should be cascading down to another firm that's willing to take on the work that doesn't fit your organization. So that ties into what I want to say here. The first thing is private equity is going to continue to be more prevalent. And based upon what we talked about very early in this call, I think that sooner or later, they're going to start to flex their muscles with the management of these firms and really drive a more professional leadership, professional management of the firms. And they're going to be forced to address that supply and demand issue. The second thing that I would say is amidst all of the change that we're talking about and the change that we're in the middle of as an industry, I think we're going to see an acceleration of baby boomer retirements. I know we're kind of at the tail end of that. But my read has been that a lot of baby boomers have been holding on. And at this stage, I think we're going to see them start to accelerate their exits. They just, they don't need to take on all of this new stuff that's coming down the pike, and it's time for them to make a decision. So those are my two things.
I read somewhere that 75% of accountants are already close to or at retirement age. So if they have been holding on, probably until their equity pots have filled up and that new generation's coming through to fill them up. So yeah, that sounds about right. Ed, what are you putting all on black or all on red at the casino of accounting?
One, ESG audit and / engagements, whatever you want to call them, are not going to be the big thing that everybody thinks they're going to be.
Okay.
There's not enough people to get the financial numbers right. So this belief that that accountants are suddenly going to break into the ESG space is just insane in my view.
And if I could add to that, I'd probably something similar is that AI is going to change the accounting world when 2/3 of accountants have not automated a bank feed yet or are still in Excel spreadsheets and shoeboxes. So maybe the AI revolution's a long way away.
Oh, yeah. And we were just beginning the AI, scratching the surface on that. We've got another story for you, but not for this podcast. The other prediction that I would make is that more and more firms are going to give up the audit entirely in favor of doing client advisory services work for those same customers.
That's bold. Michael, do you want to come back on that, given your vested interest in audit?
I agree that maybe more people will give it up, but I think it still needs to be done. It should just be done in a much more efficient manner.
Yeah. And Ed, just to let you open up a little bit on client advisory services, that move to advisory, we did a podcast series recently that you participated in, as did Dan and Steve, and we asked 110 people the same 5 questions. One of the questions was, are business owners any closer to receiving proactive advice from accountants? And that goes out on our Accounting Answers podcast that our listeners can tune into. And the overwhelming answer was, yes, they're closer, but not close enough.
That's correct. There's a long way to go. I mean, the first is to define what does your A stand for in CAS? Most people, it still stands for accounting, not advisory.
Yeah.
And until they make that transition to it's really advisory work, where they realize that they can't be doing both CAS, accounting and advisory under the same roof, because it's like it's McDonald's and Morton's. Right, pick one. You can't be both McDonald's and Morton's. Doing client accounting work is McDonald's. Doing client advisory work is Morton's Steakhouse. You can't be both.
Yeah, Steve, I'm giving you a few million dollars in chips. What are you putting them on at the roulette table? What are your 2 surefire predictions?
So one is that there is going to be no major change. The climatic flip in accountancy is not going to happen. Certainly not.
That's the anti-prediction, isn't it?
Well,
it's going to change.
Everyone keeps going on about it's going to change the world, or the in the accounting profession, the change in compliance is going to force people down a digital route. It's not. I mean, take an example from different countries, right? The UK sees Making Tax Digital, MTD, is the mandation of digital records. Yeah, only 20% of SMEs in the UK are only using a digital record keeping solution. So that's been going since 2015, 9 years in. Has still got a problem. So therefore there's no change. It's just this rising tide that seems to be coming up. The other side of things is then going to be that actually what we are going to see is a mass exodus from the industry. Partners are going to leave. And part of the reason for that is because the diminishing value of their firms, because they're not changing, therefore the multiples they're going to get for their client list is diminishing and they don't realize it. And therefore when they go to sell, they're going to get that 80% of what they thought they were going to get, and that's going to continue to diminish, and they're going to go, too hard, just take it, and they'll walk away. And then that will leave a lot of clients unhappy, because the clients and accountants are based on relationships, so there's going to be a lot of torn relationships. And I think what will happen from that is there will be influence from outside of the accountancy profession that will sweep in, and that's when we'll see that climatic flip, that major change in the profession, and it won't come from accountants.
Mm. Guys, I'm going to get your closing remarks. And by way of this question, is it a good time to be in accounting? And if so, why? I asked somebody recently, would you have your children come into accounting? He had teenage children. And he said yes and no. And for some reasons, yes, but for some reasons, absolutely no. And some of the job titles and careers that people go into now didn't exist 5-10 years ago. We all know that. People are gamers now and mobile app creators and all these AI consultants that didn't exist a while ago. So I'm asking the question, is it a good time to be an accountant? Just to finish off, you can maybe leave us with some messages of hope or some messages of dire destruction and burning platforms, but go at it however you like. Michael, what do you think? Good time to be an accountant?
I think it's an exciting time to be an accountant because I think there's a lot of opportunity out there. There's money coming in. There's change happening. And I think in any time of change, there's opportunity. So yes, would I recommend my child go into it? I would say it depends how the next 5 years go, because we're either going to end in a very good place or we'll be, to kind of Steve's prediction, we won't have progressed at all. And then I'd say no.
Yeah. Very measured. Steve, what about you? Good time to be in this game? And if so, why?
Yes, it is, because ultimately anyone coming into the industry and into the profession can be an agent of that change, right? They can be the one to set the path of where they want to go. Interesting, though. So as you were saying, I was thinking about this. I have three kids, two daughters, one boy. And if I said to my boy, going to be an accountant, I'd actually hand on heart say, yeah, do you know what? First of all, I think, would I say it to my daughters? No. The reason for that is I genuinely don't think that as a profession we've progressed enough in diversity. And I don't think they would excel. Genuinely don't. I think that the profession has got a long way to go when it comes to diversity for females. So therefore, my son, yes, go for it. I think you can make your path. The girls, you're going to have a harder struggle. Maybe we look at something else for you.
While you opened up a can of worms there right at the end of things. So I'll address that with more females on the panel. But to your point, I have a couple of daughters. The problem with the accounting as a profession is if you go into schools, and I'm a former high school math teacher, so I know this audience, and you ask them what an accountant is, they've got some very vague sense of it involves maths. But beyond that, maybe as a profession, we're not very good at selling how exciting accounting can be. What a good career choice it can be, how much you can make a difference, how much they are the guardians of business and how interesting the work could be. But let's not go there. Ed, I'm going to give you the last word in a minute, but I'm just going to pop to Dan and say, good time to be in accounting, Dan McMahon?
And I think it is. I think it's for a long time been a good time to be an accountant. There's no better place to learn the language of business and how to analyze a financial statement that could be applied in any number of disciplines, industry-wide or industries across all job categories. So I'd say yes, it's still a very good place to learn, and you can get in, you can get out, or you can stay in and take advantage of the opportunities that Michael alluded to.
Ed Kless, last words for you. You've been championing the cause of accounting for many, many years on many different platforms. And I know how passionate you are about it, but just sum up the whole debate for us about the future and why this should be a good time for accounting.
Well, it is just not the traditional path. I think that's just what we've all said, is that it's a great time to be an accountant as long as you're not going to pursue it the way that everybody or the majority of people have pursued it previously. So I think that's really the answer as I see it. Look, the function of accountant is not going away. And I don't think that there's going to be robots showing up on people's chairs and saying, nope, you've been replaced. But if you really think about it, if your job can be completely replaced by a robot or a bot or AI, your job already sucks. It's boring.
Right. Yeah.
So make it that your job is not boring, is exciting, is more analytical and predictive. You know, one of the great things that I've heard is the distinction between a data scientist and a data analyst. It's a data analyst looks at takes questions and asks questions of the data. A data scientist tries to come up with new questions to ask the data. I really like the way that's framed. So let's push accountants into the data science role and say, what are the new questions we can ask of the data?
That's exceptional. Thank you, gentlemen. We really appreciate your passion and your insights today, talking about the future of accounting.